there is an individual in the Bible that I'm pretty sure we all know. We've heard of him, but his counterpart is far more well known than he is. And I would like for us to look at this man who made a difference, who stood his ground while others around him, you might say, caved. They caved in. I want us to examine this man today, maybe a little more than you have before. Maybe you've looked at him before, but let's look at him and see what it was that he did and some of the examples, lessons that we can learn from his life, what he did, and maybe help us become more like that. The story starts in Exodus chapter 3. If you want to turn there, it will be a little bit before we get there, but Exodus chapter 3. Remember, Moses had fled from Egypt. He had fled out of Egypt when it had been discovered that he had killed a Roman soldier. And the word had gotten back to Pharaoh, and Moses fled into the wilderness. While in the wilderness, the Bible says that Moses kept the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, who was a priest of Midian. And it says here that Moses then leads the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. So here is Moses with his flock, and he's led it around here to back of Mount Horeb. And there he sees this bush that is burning, but it was not consumed by the fire. And of course, he walks over to this phenomenon. Now, I don't know about you, but I'd be checking this out too. What's going on? I think we would have all been curious to know what was going on. And of course, that is what God intended. And he is told to take off his sandals because the ground he is standing on is holy. So let's look at verse 6. We'll pick up the story here in verse 6. Moreover, he, that is God, said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. God told Moses that he was sending Moses back to Egypt because he, that is God, was going to deliver Israel from the Egyptians and bring them to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, is verse 8, as he said there, and to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, and so forth. And eventually, after Moses went there with Aaron, eventually after the 10 plagues, Pharaoh lets Israel go. And of course, we know then he recants. He goes after Israel and meets up with them at the Red Sea. And here they are, one way or the other. And God, of course, opens up the Red Sea. And God eventually delivers Israel from Egypt when the Egyptian army is devoured and drowned in the Red Sea. And we see then that the covenant, just after that, the old covenant that we call the old covenant, is with Israel is established when God comes down and speaks to all the people, proclaiming to them the Ten Commandments. Turn, if you would, over to Exodus 19. Exodus 19. But just before that day, we read what the people say in Exodus 19. Pick it up in verse 3. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. God keeps reminding Israel about what he has done for them. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. Then all the people answered together and said, All that the Lord has spoken, we will do. So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. All that God spoke, the people said they would do. So the covenant was established, but it didn't take very long for them to break it. Moses was called up to the mountain with God, and while he was up there, Aaron was coerced into making a golden calf. And they began to bow down to it, to sacrifice to it, to praise it and worship it and say, This is the God that brought us out of Egypt. If not for the intervention of Moses, as we read in Exodus 32, verse 7, the nation of Israel would have been destroyed. Turn over to Revelation 32, verse 7 for a minute. And the Lord said to Moses, Go, get down. And I can't imagine how angry God was at that time. For your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf and worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, let me alone, get out of here, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation. I will make of you a great nation. Then Moses pleaded with the Lord, his God, and said, Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians speak and say, He brought them out to harm them and to kill them in the mountains and consume them from the face of the earth? Turn your face, your fierce wrath, and relent from this harm to your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. And all this land that I have spoken of, I give to your descendants, that they shall inherit it forever. And it says, So the Lord relented from the harm which he said he would do to his people. At that point, God was going to destroy them. And God would have worked then through the descendants of Moses. I find it very interesting here, just as a side point, that God said, I will wipe them off the face of the earth, and I will work through you and your descendants. Isn't it interesting that Moses' wife was a Midianite? She wasn't even of the tribe of Israel. God wasn't worried about that. In Exodus 34, we see that God renews the covenant with Israel once again, because Moses would call back up, and this time he brought down another set of the commandments, and the covenant was renewed in chapter 34. So God's promise still stands. He still intends to bring the nation into a land of milk and honey and drive out the inhabitants. That hasn't changed. That is still where he is going and what he intends for these people, for the nation of Israel. Now, let's pick up the story in Numbers 13. You'll know where I'm going. Numbers 13. Verse 1. And the Lord said to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one a leader among them. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, all of them who were heads of the children of Israel. These 12 men were leaders among their respective tribe in Israel. They were considered leaders. The names of them are listed from verses 4 through 16. And then in verse 17, we come down and continue on with the story. So Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up this way into the south and go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or like strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage, he says, and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes, beginning the harvest. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Hamath. And they went up to the south and came to Hebron and all those other places. The descendants of Anak were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there they cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes on a pole. They also brought some of the pomegranates and the figs. The place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the men of Israel cut down there. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. So they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregations and showed them the fruit of the land. They go and spy out just as they were told. They bring back this amazing fruit of the land. Unbelievable what they brought back. Here they had it. They were carrying it to show to everyone there. In verse 27 it says, Then they told him and said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. It truly is a land of great abundance. But, here comes the but. Verse 28. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak." This says the descendants of Anak came from the giants. "And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. Oh, if we weren't having to face this. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. It is flowing with milk and honey. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." And all the congregations said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. The other 10 spies had a profound effect upon the whole nation. Those 10 had this effect that just demoralized all of the nation. But it says Joshua and Caleb strongly objected and told the nation to trust God. As Mr. Riley read, trust in God. Don't fear people. Don't fear man. We read and think about Joshua, which of course he has a whole book in the Bible named after him. But we don't often think about God's servant Caleb. That is who I would like to look at today. What were his strong character points and some of the things that we can learn from them in our personal lives? Just take a look at him and what we see here. The name Caleb means faithful or wholehearted. Faithful or wholehearted. So let's consider what we can learn about Caleb by what we have read so far. Caleb stood in the gap. I want you to notice something very interesting in what we just read. Look at verse 30 of Numbers 13. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." The Bible indicates here that it was Caleb who spoke up first. It wasn't Joshua, it wasn't Aaron, it wasn't Moses, it was Caleb. And I do not mention that to in any way discredit Joshua, Aaron, or Moses. But the fact is, Caleb contradicted these 10 leaders first. He was the first one who stepped in and say something. He did not waste any time standing up for God, procrastinating, and knowing that it was God who would deliver these nations into their hands. Once again, Israel had forgotten all the great miracles that God had performed for them. Once again, they had a short memory. We all, including me, need to ask ourselves, will we believe in God, or will we let peer pressure and our physical issues override that belief in our great God? Peer pressure and the physical surrounds are very big draws to pull us away from God. God told them that he was giving them this land of plenty and that he would drive out the people from the lands, including the descendants of Anak, the giants. God wasn't worried about them. Look at what God wants to give you and me. Look at what he wants to give you and me. Something far greater than a land flowing with milk and honey. He is promising eternity in a kingdom that is indescribable in human terms, that is sitting out there, and he has promised it to us. What peer pressure, what physical things can get in our way that will take us away from our journey? Are we going to listen to Caleb? Or are we going to listen to others to pull us away from that? Caleb had faith. Numbers 14, verse 6 through 9, once again. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord and fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." The other 10 leaders saw the bounty of the land, but they focused far more on the people who dwelt there. They focused on the physical. They did not focus on what they should have focused on. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Hold your places. Here we'll be coming back to it. Hebrews 11, 1 tells us, "Now faith is the substance of things hope for, the evidence of things not seen." Those things that are hoped for, the kingdom for us, here this land for the nation of Israel, the evidence of things not seen. They did not see. They could not see that it was God that was going to make it evident to them. Although Caleb and the other 11 leaders had seen the land, only Joshua and Caleb could see the evidence of things not seen. We all have or have had our giants to face in our lives. All of us. And more than likely, we are going to have more giants to face. It's not the end. Like Caleb and Joshua, we must focus on the promise of what God wants to give us instead of the physical objects that stand or will stand in our ways, or the comments from other peers who want to take us away from that great promise that God has for us. Back to Numbers 14. Look at verse 9. Once again, "Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are all bread. They are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." As with them, we too can take courage in those very same words. The protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear. Do not fear them. I think I've mentioned it before. How many times is that in the Bible, from Old to New Testament? Do not fear. What does Paul tell us in 2 Corinthians verse 5? Chapter 5. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. Paul writes to the Corinthians, "For we walk by faith, not by sight." It's not what we see that is important. It is the faith in what God has promised us that is important. We have to walk by faith. We can't let the physical that we see detract us from where we're going. Caleb also had great and deep concerns for others. We see in verse 6, "And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes." It says that they tore their clothes. This has the meaning of they mourned for the people with great sorrow of heart. They were mourning that the nation of Israel was turning against their God. And it moved them very deeply. It cut them to the bone, you might say, to the heart. He had deep concern for others, and he deeply wanted them to make the right decision. In Matthew 23, verse 37, what do we see? This is Jesus Christ. Matthew 23, verse 37. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her, how often have I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing." Even Jesus Christ had this same feeling. Joshua and Caleb were showing the same type of feeling that Jesus Christ was showing to Jerusalem. He showed that same compassion and sorrow of heart for the nation during his time. I'll just turn over. You don't have to turn there. You can put it in your notes. Ezekiel 9, verse 4 says, "And the Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within." Caleb and Joshua would have gotten that mark. Put a mark on those who sigh and cry for the abominations that are done within. Caleb not only had faith, but he was faithful. Look at Deuteronomy 1. Verse 34 through 40. Deuteronomy 1, verse 34 through 40. "And the Lord heard the sound of your words and was angry, and took an oath, saying, surely not one of these men of this evil generation shall see that good land of which I swore to give to your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and his children I am giving the land on which he walked, because he wholly followed the Lord. The Lord was also angry with me for your sake, saying, even you shall not go in there." That's Moses saying that. "But Joshua the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall go in there. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. Moreover, your little ones, your children, whom you say will be victims, you are mourning for your children, who you say will be victims, who today have no knowledge of good and evil, they shall go in there. To them I will give it, and they shall possess it. But as for you, Turn and take your journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. God told Moses and Aaron and the people that no one above the age of 20 except Caleb and Joshua would enter the promised land, this land flowing with milk and honey. And that is just what happened. Even Moses and Aaron died before Israel was led into that great land. The nation had to wander for 40 years, hearkening back to the 40 days that the leaders of the tribes had spied out the land God had promised to give Israel. They had to wander for 40 years, and during that time, everyone above the age of 20 died off, except for Joshua and Caleb. Now, turn over to Joshua 14. Joshua chapter 14. Continue on with the story here. I've already seen this once. We just read something about this in Deuteronomy. Now we pick it up in chapter 14, verse 6 through 14. Then the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me and Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God." So Moses swore in that day, saying, Surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, and he has said, these 45 years ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now here I am this day, 85 years old. And yet I am as strong this day as I was on that day Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now it is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. Now therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in the day, for you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord has said. And Joshua blessed him and gave him Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, as an inheritance. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord. Notice in that passage, three different times it said, because Caleb wholly followed the Lord. His heart was wholly with God. He wholly followed the Lord. And he knew, from verse 12, he knew that it would be God's doing, not his own doing in driving out those people from the land he was being given as an inheritance. He knew it wasn't anything that he could do on his own. But he trusted God, and he knew that God was going to keep his promise and going to give the nation the land. Joshua 15, verse 13 and 14. This is just setting up an interesting bit of a story here. Now to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a portion among the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron. Arba was the father of Anak. And Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak there, Sheshai, whatever those names are, and the children of Anak. They had funny names back then. And Caleb drove out the sons of Anak, these giants who the Israelites feared. Caleb faithfully listened to God, and after 45 years, he still had that faith that God had promised. He still kept that faith, wholly following the Lord. The next point, Caleb set an example for his family. Caleb set an example for his family. Continue on here in Joshua 15. Let's pick it up in verse 15 now. 15 through 17. Then he went from there to the inhabitants of Debir. Formerly the name of Debir was Kirjath-Sepher. And Caleb said, "He who attacks Kirjath-Sepher and takes it, to him I will give Aksah, my daughter, as wife." So Othniel, it says, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it, and he gave him Aksah, his daughter, as wife. This man, named Othniel, took up the challenge that Caleb gave. Notice this, though. Othniel was the son of Caleb's younger brother. In other words, this was his nephew, and now it was his son-in-law. His nephew became his son-in-law. So there was a greater connection there than just being a son-in-law. Now, let's move on a bit into the story of Israel. Judges 2, verse 7. Judges 2, verse 7. So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Verse 8 of Judges 2. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gaash. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation rose after them who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel, in verse 11, did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. Joshua dies at the age of 110. In Scripture, I could find it, there is no indication at all of when it was that Caleb dies. Before or after Joshua, we don't know. But there is this common thread, of course. A generation came up that did not know Moses, Joshua, or Caleb. And the children did evil and began to serve other gods besides the true God. It started this rotation. Became a common thread among the nation of Israel. In chapter 3, verse 7. So the children of Israel, chapter 3, verse 7, did evil in the sight of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God, and they served the Baals and Asheroths. Therefore, the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, and the children of Israel served 8 years. When the children of Israel cried out to the Lord raised up a deliverer for the children of Israel, who delivered them, Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel. He went out to war, and the Lord delivered the king of Mesopotamia into his hand, and his hand prevailed over Cushan-Rishathaim. So the land had rest, it says, for 40 years. Then Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. Here we see that the first judge of Israel after the death of Joshua was Caleb's son-in-law, who was also his nephew. There must have been some very positive influence from Caleb, and quite possibly Caleb's daughter, on Othniel, for him to have been chosen by God to be the first judge. Caleb's influence was still there to bring the nation back to God for 40 years at least. The land had rest or peace for 40 years while Othniel was judge, that is, until he died. And of course, it started all over again. As parents, grandparents, uncles, and aunts, we too have a responsibility to set a righteous and faithful example for our children, grandchildren, and our nieces and nephews, for all those in our family. Caleb never saw Othniel serve as a judge over Israel, but Caleb's legacy certainly lived on after his death. That's quite a tribute to a man who did what he needed to do when it was required, stepped up to the plate, and quietly stepped aside when it was time and served under Joshua faithfully. He just stepped aside, did what he needed to do. So, I hope that this bit of study into the life of a man we may not think a lot about has been helpful, and maybe you can glean something from his life to help you in your spiritual life as well.